Picture yourself, right, sitting in a packed theater. You are right there in the front row.
Okay, setting the scene. I like it.
Yeah. So the performer on stage looks right at you and says, "Name any animal." And you don't even hesitate. You just yell out, "Elephant."
A classic choice.
Right. So 30 seconds later, that same performer pulls this permanently sealed envelope out of a zippered leather wallet, hands it directly to you, and asks you to rip it open.
And let me guess, inside the envelope.
Inside is a piece of paper written hours before the show, predicting that you specifically would say elephant.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, your brain instantly tells you that you just witnessed a literal miracle.
Exactly. But today we are going to show you the exact, psychological loopholes that performer used to hack your brain. Welcome to the deep dive.
It really is a remarkable shift in perspective for us today. We're stepping away from our usual investigations into like hidden historical truths or cutting-edge science.
Yeah, a little bit of a pivot.
Completely. Instead, we are looking at the architecture of a lie, a very entertaining, perfectly structured lie. We're exploring how the human mind can be beautifully, willingly, and systematically deceived.
And to do this, we are pulling from a highly specific, totally fascinating underground source.
Oh, it is incredibly niche.
It is. We were looking at a professional instructional manual from 2010, written by a working magician named Cody S. Fisher. The manual is called Cody's Comedy Confabulation.
Which is such a great title.
It really is. And our mission today is to take a master class in reverse engineering a problem. We aren't just looking at a magic trick. We are going to explore how Fisher took a classic, well-loved routine, ruthlessly tore it apart to find all of its logical flaws, and then just completely rebuilt it from the ground up.
Rebuilt it to perfectly manipulate audience psychology, attention, and memory.
Yeah.
And I think the most compelling part of Fisher's document isn't even the magic props themselves.
Right. Though the props are cool.
Oh, they're very clever. But it's his absolute obsession with eliminating cognitive friction for you, the audience member.
Like tying up loose ends.
Exactly. He acts as a psychological architect, ensuring that every single loose end in your mind is securely tied up before you even realize the deception is happening.
So to really appreciate Fisher's ingenious solution, we have to understand the deeply flawed foundation he was working from. We need to look at the original trick.
Right, the classic version.
Yeah. In the magic world, this specific effect is known as a confabulation or a real-time prediction. It's originally credited to a brilliant magician named Alan Shackson.
And the premise goes exactly like the scenario you just painted at the top of the show.
Right. A magician stands on stage wanting to prove they can predict the future. They ask the audience to randomly call out three things. Usually it's a number, a random animal, and a grocery store item.
And the magician writes these down on a notepad as they are called out.
Right. Then for the grand finale, the magician reaches into their pocket, pulls out a wallet, and reveals a prediction written long before the show began that perfectly matches those three completely random things you just yelled out.
And on the surface, for a lay audience, it feels entirely impossible.
Okay.
Those items couldn't have been forced or prearranged. You literally just thought of them right then and there.
Yeah, I mean, the math of the probability alone is staggering.
It really is.
Sure, the probability is staggering. But okay, let's unpack this. If you think about the actual staging of the routine for more than like a few seconds, my brain instantly starts throwing up red flags.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the classic trick feels like a heist movie with massive glaring plot holes. You know the kind of movie where the master thieves park their getaway car right in front of the bank, leave the engine running?
And put a flashing neon sign on the roof that says robbers inside.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly. Because if you are a supreme mind reader, or if you actually predicted the future and already have the answers in your pocket, why on earth do you need to write down the audience's answers as they say them?
Right, it makes no sense.
Are we supposed to believe this omniscient wizard just has a terrible short-term memory? Doesn't the very act of writing on stage immediately broadcast to the audience that the magician is just secretly writing the prediction right then and there?
It absolutely broadcasts exactly that. And this is the very first critique Fisher levels at the classic routine in his manual.
He calls it out immediately.
He does. He identified that the standard method is practically an insult to a modern audience's intelligence. But Fisher goes even deeper into the specific physical flaws of the classic performance.
Tonight, the evidence.
Yes. He points out that traditionally, the paper size of that final miraculous prediction matches the exact dimensions of the notepad the performer was just writing on.
Which is just, that's leaving your fingerprints all over the crime scene.
And it gets worse. The ink color on the final prediction is usually the exact same color as the marker the performer was just holding on stage.
Oh, man.
Fisher explains why this matters so much from a psychological standpoint. In your mind, identical physical evidence creates a direct logical trail back to the deception.
Right, because if I see you writing with a blue pen on a yellow legal pad.
And then my so-called impossible prediction from yesterday is mysteriously written in blue ink on yellow legal paper. Your brain instantly connects those dots. The visual consistency entirely ruins the illusion.
Okay, so the magician is trapped in this weird paradox then. Because to make the trick work practically, you absolutely must write down the randomly called out items in real time.
Yes, there is literally no other way to get the information onto the final paper.
But to make the trick work psychologically, you cannot let the audience know you are writing. You have to, like, write without writing. So how do you do it?
Well, this brings up a fundamental misunderstanding about misdirection. We often think of misdirection as someone pointing to the left so you don't look right.
Right, like spatial misdirection. Look over here.
Exactly, it's spatial. But Fisher realizes that the strongest, most impenetrable misdirection isn't spatial at all. It is emotional.
And his answer to this is incredibly fun. You weaponize comedy.
You really do.
You turn the actual writing process into a joke, literally. Fisher's solution is a prop he calls the gag pad.
The gag pad! It's brilliant!
Imagine the magician standing on stage holding an 11 by 14 inch spiral drawing pad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is massive.
Huge.
Fisher actually recommends spray painting the cover black so it looks serious and unassuming. But inside this giant pad, he has four pages pre-written with gag predictions in big, thick black marker.
So the magician asks the first volunteer, think of a number between 1 and 1,000.
Right. The magician pretends to concentrate, scribbles aggressively on the pad, and asks, are you thinking of the number 634? And the volunteer obviously says, no.
Which is entirely expected because the odds of guessing a number between 1 and 1,000 are minuscule.
Right. But then the magician turns the giant pad around to face the audience, and written in huge, bold letters is just the word no.
And the audience erupts in laughter. It is a cheap vaudeville-style gag, but a highly effective one.
Totally. So then he asks for a four-legged animal. He pretends to draw it, intensely focused, and asks what the volunteer thought of. Let's say you yell out elephant.
Okay.
He turns the pad around, and it is this incredibly crude, generic, goofy drawing of an animal that essentially looks like a potato with four stick legs.
Another massive laugh from the crowd.
Yeah. Then he asks for a grocery item, pretends to sketch a detailed label, and reveals a giant generic barcode. And for the grand finale, he turns the pad around to reveal a page that just says, this guy sucks.
Which serves as a fantastic self-deprecating button to close out the whole sequence. It disarms the audience completely.
It totally does. But, okay, hang on. I am hung up on the physical logistics here.
Okay, what part?
Well, the audience is laughing, sure.
Yes.
But the magician is still standing center stage holding a giant pad. How are they actually writing the real predictions? The number 147, the elephant, the carton of milk, on a tiny piece of folded paper without anyone noticing? I mean, a performer's hands are right there in front of hundreds of people.
What's fascinating here is if we connect this to the mechanics of cognitive processing, we find the core genius of Fisher's routine. It relies on a classic theatrical technique called the one-behind principle.
The one-behind principle.
But it is heavily reinforced by the psychological cover of laughter.
I need you to break that down for me visually. How does the one-behind work in space?
Think of the giant pad like a stage curtain. The audience only sees the front of the curtain, which is the joke. But behind the curtain, the magician's hands are completely out of sight, operating a totally different set of controls.
Oh, interesting.
When the magician opens the giant pad to the first blank page, their left thumb is secretly pressing a tiny folded piece of paper against the stiff cardboard back of the pad.
Okay, so the left hand is holding the pad and the secret paper.
Right. Their right hand is holding the marker. But when the magician asks for that first number, they aren't actually writing the number. They are just pretending to draw the word no that is already pre-written on the next page.
Ah. So they're just tracing the air, essentially, making the physical motions of writing without actually marking the paper.
Precisely. Then, when the volunteer reveals their number, let's say it's 147, the audience laughs at the no gag.
Okay, I'm with you.
While you, the audience member, are laughing, the magician turns to the next page to ask for the animal. Now, the magician asks for the animal, and while they are pretending to draw the goofy potato animal, their right hand is hidden entirely behind that massive 11 by 14 pad.
Wait.
Out of sight, the right hand is secretly writing the number 147 on that tiny folded paper held by the left thumb.
That is incredibly sneaky.
It is.
So he just keeps leapfrogging the information. He writes the previous answer while pretending to draw the next guess.
Yes. The giant pad is a physical shield hiding the hands. But more importantly, the laughter is a cognitive shield.
A cognitive shield.
Exactly. When you are actively laughing, your analytical brain momentarily shuts down. You are experiencing an emotion, a release of tension. In that specific split second of laughter, you are not scrutinizing the exact placement of the performer's right hand.
Man, the comedy isn't just there to be funny. It is a highly calibrated tool designed to create an invisible blind spot.
It really is.
Fisher has taken the weakest, most suspicious part of the routine, the real-time writing, and transformed it into the most entertaining part of the show.
He turned the liability into the feature.
Okay, I am buying the psychological shield. I'm laughing. I don't see him writing. But what happens when he hands me the paper at the end?
Ah, the evidence.
Right. If I see black marker ink on yellow paper, I'm going to instantly remember the giant black marker in the pad he was just holding. Psychological misdirection handles the action of writing, but what about the physical evidence left behind?
And this is where Fisher enters the realm of custom gimmicks. He undertakes a meticulous severing of logical trails.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Fisher doesn't just buy something off the shelf. He constructs a completely bespoke piece of evidence. He details this brilliant DIY craft in the manual.
Yes, the preparation is intense.
First, the paper. He absolutely does not use paper from the giant pad. He takes a specific 5.5 by 4.25 inch piece of crisp, bright white paper. And he pre-writes an entire letter on it in fine-tipped red ink.
Red ink, that's a crucial detail.
Right. It says something along the lines of, "Last night I dreamed I was performing for your company. It was a great show. They gave me a standing ovation when I correctly predicted the following three things."
Which perfectly sets the stage for the revelation. It establishes that the prediction was supposedly made the night before.
Exactly. And then he leaves specific blank spots in the bottom right corner of the paper for the number, the animal, and the grocery product.
Just enough room.
Yeah. Then he folds this paper into quarters so that only that blank bottom right corner is exposed. That is the tiny, compact, folded packet he hides behind the giant pad with his left thumb.
But the true stroke of genius, the element that really forces the audience's brain to break, is the marker itself.
The gimmicked Sharpie. This blew my mind.
It's so clever.
Fisher takes two standard Sharpie twin tip markers. One writes in red ink, one writes in black ink. He takes the caps off both. He puts the black caps onto the red marker.
A simple switch, but highly effective.
But he goes further. Because the red Sharpie still has a tiny little plastic ring of red visible near the tip. If you are sitting in the front row and you see a flash of red plastic, you might get suspicious.
Right. You can't have any red showing.
So Fisher takes the actual black Sharpie and literally colors over the red plastic ring on the gimmick marker so it looks entirely 100% black.
It is a phenomenal, almost paranoid level of detail.
Think about this like a criminal establishing a flawless alibi. You physically watch the magician standing on stage, holding a giant brown pad with black spiral binding.
You see it with your own eyes.
Right. You watch him writing in huge aggressive strokes with what is undeniably a thick black marker. You can probably even hear the squeak of the marker.
The sound really sells it.
Yeah. That visual and auditory data is burned into your retinas and your ears. But then the final prediction is pulled out, and it is on a tiny, delicate piece of white paper, completely covered in fine-tipped red ink.
This is the intentional creation of cognitive dissonance. By completely changing the paper size, the paper color, the ink color, and the stroke width of the writing, Fisher completely severs the causal link.
He cuts the cord entirely.
I want you to really think critically about what happens in your mind when you witness this. When you remove the visual connections between the setup, the black marker on the big pad, and the climax, the red ink on the tiny white paper, your brain simply cannot reverse engineer the method.
Because your brain says, well, he obviously didn't write it just now because I saw him using a black marker.
Exactly. The brain searches for a logical explanation, finds that the physical evidence directly contradicts the only possible logical method, and is therefore forced to accept it as a miracle.
Wow.
It is a forced error in human logic. You are given data that makes the truth impossible to deduce.
A forced error. So the mechanics are flawless, the psychological cover is perfect, the physical evidence is completely untraceable. But, as any good performer knows, a trick only becomes a miracle based on how it is finally revealed to the audience. We need to talk about the climax.
Right, the theatrical packaging of the secret. How does the paper get from behind the pad into the impossible location?
Okay, so the manual describes the climax meticulously. After the final, this guy sucks ass gag, you are laughing.
Oh.
Under the cover of that laughter, Fisher's right hand secretly palms the tiny folded paper, caps the gimmicked marker, and reaches into his inside jacket pocket to put the marker away.
But he's not just putting the marker away, is he?
Nope. While his hand is hidden in his pocket, he is actually loading that tiny folded paper into a very specific wallet.
He specifically recommends a LaPaul-style wallet, specifically the Garnier Elite 3 function wallet.
Now, to someone who isn't a magician, a wallet just sounds like a wallet. But a LaPaul wallet is a mechanical marvel. It doesn't just hold cash.
Not at all.
Hidden behind the leather lining is a secret chute, essentially a slide. Before the show, Fisher places a sealed envelope inside the zippered compartment of the wallet. The mouth of that envelope lines up perfectly with the secret chute.
So it's primed and ready.
Exactly. Huh. So when his hand goes into his pocket, he just slides the folded prediction down the chute, and it instantly drops perfectly inside the nested envelope.
And he adds another layer of security with rubber cement and wax paper.
Yes. Oh my gosh. The envelope inside the wallet is prepped with rubber cement, kept open by a small piece of wax paper. When the prediction slides in, he pulls out the wax paper, squeezes the envelope, and the rubber cement instantly and permanently seals it shut.
It's so clean.
By the time he pulls the wallet out of his pocket, the envelope looks impenetrable. He pulls it out of the zippered compartment and hands it to an audience member. And Fisher makes a very specific note here. He says, to make sure you choose an audience member who does not need glasses to read the final prediction.
Which seems like a minor performance note, but it is actually crucial for pacing.
You don't want the grand, miraculous climax of your entire show to stall out because the guy you handed the envelope to is fumbling around his pockets looking for his reading glasses.
Right. It absolutely kills the momentum.
Exactly. And what's great is that Fisher provides incredible alternative endings for performers who don't want to buy an expensive gimmick leather wallet. He explains how to adapt the core secret to other props.
The modular nature of his design is fascinating.
He talks about an idea from magician Mark Genest where you pop a black balloon and the prediction seemingly falls out of it.
Oh, that's very visual.
Yeah, the way that works is brilliant. The balloon is attached to a plastic tube. You slide the paper down the tube right before you pop the balloon with a pin, making it look like the paper was inside the whole time.
That's incredibly clever.
Or you could use a locked wooden caps box. A caps box has a tiny, invisible slot and a lid. The box sits on the table all night. You palm the paper, pick up the box, and simply slide the paper through the slot into the box just a second before you unlock it.
Very subtle.
Right. Or you can use a David Regal special delivery envelope, which has double layers and a clear window on the front, allowing you to invisibly switch a dummy paper for the real one.
What this shows is that true mastery of a subject means understanding the core principles well enough to adapt them to any environment.
Yeah, you're not locked into one prop.
Exactly. Fisher isn't just teaching you a trick. He is teaching you an operational engine. Once you understand the engine, the one behind principle hidden by comedy and the severed logical trail of the ink, you can drop that engine into any chassis you want, whether it is a zippered wallet, a balloon, or a wooden box.
I have to say, though, thinking about the actual experience of sitting in the audience, asking three separate people for random words could get really tedious.
It's a valid point.
Even with the jokes, having a guy stand on stage writing things down for 2 minutes could feel like watching data entry.
So what does this all mean for the overall vibe of the show? Is it just a silent puzzle being solved on stage? How do you keep the energy from dying?
It absolutely could drag. And that is why Fisher introduces another vital layer of sensory manipulation, music.
The music drops. This is such a surprising theatrical part of the manual. Fisher uses 15 to 20 second clips of highly recognizable, high energy music during the routine.
It completely changes the atmosphere.
Totally. When he does the first no gag, he plays a blast of Information Society's What's On Your Mind. When he is supposedly drawing the animal, he plays Aretha Franklin's Think.
Very fitting song choices too.
Right. For the grocery item, it is En Vogue's Never Gonna Get It. And when that final prediction is read by the audience member, he blasts Handel's Hallelujah Chorus.
It is a masterful stroke of theatrical pacing. If we look at the reality of the situation, the magician is standing on stage, secretly writing things down while pretending to draw.
Which takes actual Physical time.
It takes physical time. If done in silence, it creates what broadcasters call dead air. And dead air is the absolute enemy of entertainment.
Because dead air is when the audience's mind starts to wander.
Hmm.
It's when the tension drops and they start looking too closely at your hands or analyzing the timeline of events.
Precisely. By injecting these short, high-energy bursts of recognizable music, Fisher completely eliminates the dead air. He transforms a fundamentally boring information-gathering process into a highly produced, multi-sensory experience.
It's almost like a music video.
Yeah, the music dictates the rhythm of the performance, keeps the energy soaring, and provides yet another layer of cognitive distraction. You are tapping your feet to Aretha Franklin, laughing at the goofy drawings, and you are totally oblivious to the meticulous, covert data entry happening right in front of you.
It is just brilliant from top to bottom. So to pull all of this together and synthesize this journey for you, Cody Fisher didn't just invent a cool new magic trick here. What we have seen today is a man who audited a broken psychological system.
A perfect way to put it.
He looked at a classic piece of performance art, identify the critical logical flaws, the suspicious real-time writing, the identical ink, the matched paper, and he systematically engineered a solution for every single one of them.
Solving problems one by one.
He used physical homemade gimmicks to sever the evidence trail, and he masked the entire covert operation in the incredibly disarming power of comedy and music.
It is a perfect case study in human psychology. It demonstrates how easily your perception can be managed when someone understands exactly what your brain is looking for and exactly how to feed your brain something else to chew on instead.
It really makes you second guess everything you see.
And I think that is the perfect thought to leave you with today. We have spent this time looking at a magician on a stage, but think about your own daily life.
Oh, that's interesting.
Think about the marketing campaigns you consume, the negotiations you enter, or the way digital interfaces constantly guide your clicks and your attention. Where else are you being skillfully misdirected by a good laugh, a catchy soundbite, or a carefully curated piece of evidence?
Right.
When your analytical brain takes a break to smile at a clever ad or a funny post, what is happening behind the scenes?
That is a wildly unsettling and totally brilliant question. Thank you so much for joining us in this deep dive into the art of deception. It is a powerful reminder that sometimes the most profound and calculated truths are hidden right behind a really, really good gag. Keep your eyes open out there.